time when people don't even have their own ability to do agriculture themselves as they did in the last Great Depression. So this could be very devastating, and we're gearing up to respond to it. That's something that many Food on Pumps chapters are discussing actively, and try to be and encouraging even any other projects that want to do help people eat, we are all in on that.
That's Keith McHenry, Food Not Bombs. We thank you, Keith, for joining us on Flashpoints and for the important information based on people in the field. Incredibly important way to get information about what's going on with food and hunger. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're out of here.
And that does it for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Our theme music is written and produced by Charlie Lang. For questions, comments, email Dennis Bernstein at dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO.
I'm Jude.
And I'm Jude.
We are part of the KBOO Youth Collective.
And on the fourth Wednesday of every month, our show, The Underground, airs.
Tune in on November 26th for our live presidential election,
where we determine which youth deserves to hold the crown of the underground.
Your vote matters.
And when you vote, vote
for Jude.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, I thought...
Yeah, you were voting for me. I'm Jude.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
Reparations, as we are defining it here at the Council of Churches, has to be separate from charity. It is different. Charity does not require any vulnerability. It does not require any risk. And charity is dependent on a power differential. And reparations, and this is what I tell people when I speak on reparations is going to require risk, it's going to require vulnerability, and it is going to require a shifting in power differentials.
I'm Stephanie Schubert with Pacifica Network. Today on Sprouts, we hear Mark Helpsmeet of Northern Spirit Radio speaking with Jim Bear Jacobs about sacred sites, tours, and Native healing. Here is Mark Helpsmeet.
I first learned about Jim Bear Jacobs while reading an announcement in the Twin Cities Friends Meeting newsletter about the Sacred Sites Tours, which are led by Jim Bear and other Native Americans in the area around the Twin Cities, Minnesota. He is a founder and convener of Healing Minnesota Stories, and he's also a member of the Stockbridge Munsee Mohican Nation in central Wisconsin. Perhaps most relevant today is that Jim Bear Jacobs is currently the Director of Racial Justice for the Minnesota Council of Churches and a parish associate at the Church of All Nations Presbyterian Church. We'll be talking to him about all of these areas of his involvement in justice and healing in this region. But before we talk to Jim Bear, I want to share with you just a snippet of a song by 3-time Grammy Awards winner Bill Miller, who is also a member of the Mohican Nation in Wisconsin. We're sharing a small part of Bill's song, Praises, to set the stage for today's visit with Jim Bear. Here's Bill Miller first, Praises.
Thank you. mountains and the streams. And I praise you for the eagle, the visions and the dreams. I praise you for my people, the mountains and the streams. I praise you for the eagle, the visions and the dreams, the visions and the dreams, the visions and the dreams.
That's just about a third of Bill Miller's song Praises. Let's go now to Minneapolis, Minnesota via Zoom to speak with Jim Bear Jacobs. Jim, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
As part of your work with Minnesota Council of Churches, I understand that you're co-director of racial justice for Minnesota Council of Churches. What does that mean? What's the job description? You have to achieve racial justice for the entire state?
Well, that's the hope. So at Minnesota Council of Churches, we are building a program centered around truth-telling, education, and ultimately reparations for Minnesota's American Indian and African American communities. Our membership at the Minnesota Council of Churches is 27 different denominations across the state of Minnesota. It represents well over a million people of the Christian faith in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, we know that Minnesota is one of the most racially disparate states to live in the country. Minnesota is routinely voted in the top on lists as best places to live. However, the caveat is that is a very good place to live if you are a white person. It is one of the worst places to live if you are a person of color. And, you know, we have the recognition that many of our denominational members are overwhelmingly white. These are historic denominations with historic congregations here in Minnesota. And, you know, those churches were around when white supremacy was built in Minnesota. And many of those initial land grabbers, slaveholders, they attended the churches here in Minnesota. And so, yeah, we are into a program and continuing to build a program that hopes to bring churches along into, I guess a good word for it is reparations ministry, to make racial justice reparations as part of the fabric of their existence.
I have been reading, following a lot of cases where people have been working on reparations. Actually, something that happened in Minnesota, someone I interviewed, I don't know what it was, 8 years ago, he's Mennonite, and as part of his heritage, he passed on a couple hundred acres of the family farm.
I think you're talking about John Stays.
It sounds right. Yeah. Is he an exceptional case, if you can name him?
Well, I know John personally. He's a friend of mine. And yeah, that has been a journey for him. Yeah, I mean, the situation was, is he was a co-inheritor of family land in southwestern Minnesota and has chosen to make reparations on his portion of the land that he inherited to find a way to give it back to Indigenous communities in Minnesota. Yeah, and he is part of the Mennonite Church and has been deeply involved in the Mennonites' own journey towards racial justice and reparations, not just in Minnesota, but his case and a number of other cases are lifted up in some of the Mennonite literature across the nation as examples of how to consider reparations.
How did that work in his case? It's far enough back in my memory that I'm having a hard time pulling it forward. How does reparations work?
Well, I think ultimately, well, and I'll lift up John as an example, because as you said, I think he is an exceptional example. It requires a shifting of mindset. When we at the council here announced this program we were doing, a lot of people reached out and offered examples of what they were doing that they were calling reparations. But what they were doing was charity. And reparations, as we are defining it here at the Council of Churches, has to be separate from charity. It is different. Charity does not require any vulnerability. It does not require any risk. And charity is dependent on a power differential. And reparations, and this is what I tell people when I speak on reparations, reparations is going to require risk. It's going to require vulnerability, and it is going to require a shifting in power differentials. It is a release of that power and influence and a transfer of that power into communities of color and traditionally marginalized communities. So that's one thing I speak about when I speak to churches or denominations about reparations, is that you don't get a pain-free path towards reparations. It's going to cost you something. You're going to feel it. And, you know, I grew up Christian, so I have been in various churches literally, you know, for 46 years now. And particularly for the Christian faith communities that I speak to, this is the call of the gospel. You know, if we look at Paul's letter to the Philippians in chapter 2, you know, he says you need to adopt the very nature of Christ, who was an equal with God, but didn't consider equality with God anything to be held. And he humbled himself, in a sense, he emptied himself of that power. And that is the call of the gospel. So one of the benefits of working with faith communities is, in large part, the Christian faith communities have all subscribed to a centralized belief system. You know, it's contained in their holy scriptures. And so part of what I do is I just come along and I say, well, let's look at what we already say we believe and find ways to live that out.
One of my concerns has been that out of guilt, people can give money, it might be charity, it might be actually painful to the person to give it up. But my question is, will it do any good? Will it help? I actually knew someone who was part of a tribe, Eastern Wisconsin, who I worked with, and she talked about money she was getting from casinos, you know, stuff that was split amongst tribe members. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that my judgment, and I was sitting there watching how she's doing this, she was not doing good things. She ended up being a thief also and some other things. But, and I'm not generalizing this to everyone, but I'm just saying money that lands in your lap, it can be used for good or bad. And that can be for rich people, poor people, powerful people, weak people. There's part of me that says, when I'm going to take on some pain, I really would like it to be doing some good in the world.
Sure, I see that. I see that. But also, when we look at reparations as an obligation, I mean, you make your payments every month to the utility companies and to your cell phone company, and you have no qualms over how the CEOs of those companies spend your money.
Oh, I do have qualms.
Well, you have qualms, but not enough to stop paying and not enough to, you know what I'm saying? Like, when we think of this as an obligation, that there has been injustice, there has been harm, and there's an obligation to make remuneration for that. And the fact of the matter is this country was built on the genocide of Indigenous people, on the theft of Indigenous land, and on the stolen labor of Black enslaved bodies. And there's not a faction of our country that's more than 200 years old that does not trace a significant portion of their generational wealth right back to those two things. And those benefits continue. Reparations does not necessarily simply mean you're writing a check every month. You know, as we've discussed, you know, in this case with John, it's a return of land. It's a recognition that for generations, his family benefited from the theft of land of Dakota people. And John is one who holds his faith very deeply. And, you know, he was part of my conversational circles as he was wrestling with this. And it's not like he made a rash decision and just said, oh, well, I'm just going to, here's the land, you know, but you do come to that. I hear your argument very, very often. And to me, that sounds like an argument of someone who wants to maintain a high level of control over what happens. And as I said, reparations involves risk and vulnerability. And you cannot be in high risk and vulnerable and completely in control all at the same time. You have to relinquish control.
Actually, my point is, I think reparations should be done. They must be done. But the question is, how do you do them so that they do some good as opposed to doing more harm? Because people who win the lottery very frequently end up in a worse situation because they get their money that way. There's a human nature. How did John do his situation? And I'm partly inspired by something that I found out last couple of years that one of the Quaker meetings in Philadelphia area did as part of their act of reparations. They found a way to do it, to give back to the community. And they were taking from this big money that they had saved up that they had been handed down to the Quaker meeting for generations. They said, okay, we got to cut into this. We got to give it back. How can we do it? So it's the how of doing it in a way that's actually going to be helpful. That is my question.
Yeah. And I think that comes along as part of building any reparations work. You have to do that in relationship. I mean, that's exactly what John did. He volunteered immense amounts of time to an organization called Makoche Ikichupe, which is a Dakota land recovery organization. He built those relationships and there was trust. And that's ultimately kind of what led to his act of reparations. And that's what I think what I call churches into is I'm not asking churches to simply write a check. I mean, that potentially is part of it. But what I'm asking churches is, particularly with the American Indian community, since that's where my focus is, what I'm asking them to do is completely reimagine their relationship with American Indians. Because for many denominations and churches, the only contact with American Indians is as a mission field. You're sending your youth group out to our reservations for 2 weeks every summer to, you know, hand out used clothes and paint church buildings and stuff. And that's the only contact you have with American Indians for many, many of these churches and denominations. And so what I say is, I am not interested in being your mission field anymore. American Indian people, we don't need your salvation. It's been largely ineffective. It's been harmful to American Indian people. So I'm not interested in being your mission field, but let's build a relationship where instead of you coming to me with your good news, you invite me into your worship service and you begin to hear the good news from American Indian peoples and communities. Because this experiment in this uniquely Western brand of Christianity that America is so wrapped up in, it's not sustainable. And we're seeing that. Churches are closing their doors every single day in this country. Once vibrant worshiping communities are barely hanging on. I forget the statistics, but an overwhelming number of churches are going to close their doors in the next decade. So clearly, something is not sustainable. And what I say is, you know, look to the American Indian people. Stop bringing your sacred stories to us and saying, well, let me tell you what this says. But instead, invite us in, ask us what these stories mean, what they have to say. I'm not interested in being a church's mission field. I'm interested in being a theologian, a preacher, a teacher. That's what interests me. And as that relationship builds, you know, you build that trust. And so maybe now you're not simply writing a check blindly and you're worrying about, is it going to do any good? You've built that relationship and you know that person or that organization's heart and the good that they want from that.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Stephanie Schubert with Pacifica Network. Today on Sprouts, we're listening to Mark Helpsmeet of Northern Spirit Radio, speaking with Jim Bear Jacobs about sacred sites, tours, and native healing. Once again, here is Mark Helpsmeet.
One of the things I read about on the website for Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, the reparation learning labs that happen roughly monthly, whose project are they and what do you do in a reparation learning lab?
Yeah, so those are, I don't even know if they've launched yet, but they are, it's a think tank kind of thing. And this really has been the work of some of the very dedicated staff of Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. We are seeing these programs for reparations kind of popping up across, well, certainly across the Twin Cities here in Minnesota, but with a statewide and some even a nationwide proposed focus. And so we have the Reparations Learning Labs at Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. There's another organization that has developed a curriculum called Sacred Reckonings, which is all about moving congregations through a process to ultimately make reparations as part of their functioning ministry, as part of their budget. And so we're seeing that, and we have our own reparations work group here at the Minnesota Council of Churches that, you know, we're trying to build the process for churches to engage in the work of reparations. I think it's somewhat understandable that so much of this work is happening in Minnesota. I mean, just over 3 years ago now, the murder of George Floyd, which was such a public spectacle, you know, Minnesota became the epicenter really for racial justice work. And it is out of that murder of George Floyd that the Council of Churches, our own Truth and Reparations program, was built. And we see a lot of this work coming up now as a very considered and thought out response to what is the responsibility for white people, what is the responsibility for faith communities. Because when George Floyd took his last breath and the entire world saw it, you can't ignore the problem anymore.
And I'm in Wisconsin. I understand you're from the Stockbridge Muncie Mohican Nation, Wisconsin. You're in Minnesota now in the Twin Cities area. And, you know, Wisconsin and Minnesota have been progressive states historically.
Yeah, there are 11 tribes in Minnesota. There are 11 tribes in Wisconsin. So wherever you are in either of those states, you're probably no more than 2 hours away from an American Indian reservation. But also in our larger metropolitan areas, certainly the Twin Cities in Minnesota, Madison, Milwaukee, and Wisconsin, there are vibrant indigenous communities. And those communities are going to have organizations and people that are working for the betterment of their own communities, but also organizations and peoples that are working for the betterment of just trying to level the playing field on racial justice. And certainly colleges and universities are a great place to try to get a finger on the pulse of what's happening in the arena of racial justice. And honestly, that generation, the young people are, you know, we're seeing the visioning, we're seeing the beautiful creativity come out of those communities. And then from there, it just, you know, it requires a certain amount of listening, humility, putting aside one's own ego and just being willing to be taught and to learn. You know, in Minnesota, we have an advantage of, you know, our lieutenant governor is a Native woman, and we have a Minnesota Supreme Court justice who's American Indian woman. So we're seeing American Indian peoples really kind of making strides into those seats of power. And I think fittingly, it is so incredibly beautiful to see that many of these positions are filled by Native women. You know, at the national level, Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, another Native woman. For myself, as an Indigenous person, but also particularly as a man, you know, it's refreshing. It's refreshing, and it's also a time of my own interrogation, right? And I think this is just a lesson in privilege in general, whether it's white privilege or male privilege, that it's time to give voice to the powerful women in our communities. And so I think, you know, how does one get involved? How does one form those relationships? And, you know, it just requires a humility, and it requires an understanding that you are coming into these circles not because you have answers that you are offering, but because you legitimately want to learn, and you want to learn, what is my role? What role can I fulfill in making justice? And, you know, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to misstep. It's just the nature of any kind of cross-cultural relationship. You're going to misstep. And how you handle yourself in those missteps is key, because you can either get very defensive and shut off, close yourself in, or you can take your correction, you can learn from it, and hope to do better next time.
I wish I had more time with you, but the reason that brought me here was because I wanted to know about sacred site tours.
Yeah.
And again, you've been part of this. How long has this been going? What do you do? And who participates in this? Who are the people who are going on the tour?
So I started this 12 years ago. I started it 12 years ago because probably about 15 years ago, I went on a tour of some of the really significant indigenous sites here in the Twin Cities. And I came away with a sense of shame because I had grown up in the Twin Cities. I had been to these sites a number of times, and I never knew the indigenous story of these sites. And it took a Dakota man who was a friend of mine to bring me through these places to learn this story. And that sense of shame of not knowing led me into action. And so I started listening to Dakota storytellers, listen to Dakota historians, reading various books. I just felt, I mean, Mark, my home is here. I've lived here my whole life. I owe it to the indigenous people to know their story. And, you know, I wondered, like, is this something that people would find interest in? I found it deeply fascinating. I found it very powerful to have my feet touching the earth in these places where such rich history was held, both beautiful history and deeply tragic history. And so I started asking around my Dakota friends, and I started asking permission to see if this was something that could potentially be beneficial for Dakota people, and eventually received permission from elders from the four Dakota communities in Minnesota. And so I started doing these sacred sites tours in 2011. I honestly thought that by the end of 2012, I would have exhausted the audience, and that by 2013, I would have to find something else to do with my energy. And I have never been more wrong. The interest just keeps building. We are, you know, here I am almost 13 years out from it and busier now than I've ever been. We run these tours from basically mid-April to mid-November. I mean, there are times we're doing three of them a week. Our audience is started primarily with churches and faith communities. People wanted to kind of just learn about the history of where the indigenous history of, you know, where they are. We have had groups from every college and university campus in the Twin Cities. We've been making, in the last few years, been making entry into the medical field. We're seeing groups who are hearing about it from Georgia to Washington, to Washington State. It's been written up in a couple of books. And I say this not to try to build myself up, because maybe, Mark, I am more surprised than anyone that it is what it is. And I just feel so honored to be able to do this and lead people through this. And I mean, the feedback we're getting is that this is ground shaking for people. It's transformational. I hear from people 7 years later, I'd say I still regularly think about that experience I had.
We've been speaking with Jim Bear Jacobs. I'm pleased to know you. I appreciate you taking all this time to talk to me, Jim Bear.
Thank you, Mark. Good to talk to you.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to Mark Helpsmeet of Northern Spirit Radio speaking with Jim Bear Jacobs about sacred sites, tours, and Native healing. Production assistance came from Stephanie Schubert. Music you heard included Praises from Bill Miller. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase globally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Stephanie Schubert with Pacifica Network. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Tune to KBOO Portland.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KBOO to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift.